Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and thanks for tuning in to Injustice, the show that shares stories of injustice and allows listeners to ask questions and seek advice. Each month, we feature guests who have been personally impacted by the criminal justice system and or making a difference in the Black community. I am author Melinda Robertson, your host and founder of Black Mothers for Justice, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit that provides a safe space where mothers, children wrongfully or rightfully incarcerated can speak their truth without being judged. The mission is to educate mothers about an unfair and unjust criminal justice system and systemic racism, to free them of the hurt, pain, shame, and guilt, to begin the healing process, because healthy mothers lead to building better communities. A Black Mother's Guide, How to Survive the Criminal Justice System, Part 2, will be released this spring. Part 1 is the stories of survival from five mothers impacted by the criminal justice system, while Part 2 breaks down the entire legal process, beginning with arrests, warrants, plea deals, court hearings, grand jury, etc., and explains in detail summons, indictments, Miranda rights, interrogations, arraignments, etc. Because we all know that knowledge is power. Black Mothers for Justice announced the release of the Black Mothers for Justice magazine, which will be released quarterly. This magazine is timely in today's climate, with gun violence and carjackings at an all-time high, and being committed by minors, which is a result of parenting or lack thereof. Some of the topics the magazine will cover to educate mothers about their responsibilities as parents are: your child is not your friend, the role violent video games play in today's violence, and stop allowing everyone access to your child. If you would like to be part of the Black Mothers for Justice movement, please visit www.blackmothersforjustice.com. and join our Facebook page to help rebuild the village that's desperately needed community. This week's featured guest is Brother Kareem Mowat, an artist, writer, author, editor, director, and producer of the Thornton Prison of Terror documentary that's been selling out to the audience at the Alamo Theater in D.C. since its release. Kareem served a total of 20 years in various prisons, from Lorton, federal system, private prisons, Virginia State, Supermax prison, Sussex, and Red Onion. While incarcerated, he wrote screenplays, and when he was released in 2011, he bought a camera off the streets and a laptop, then purchased editing software and taught himself how to use it, hands-on, and YouTube tutorials. I had the opportunity to check out the documentary over the weekend, and it blew me away. Kareem's extensive research on Lorton, one of the most notorious prisons in the United States, went all the way back to when it first opened in 1910 until it closed in 2001. It's a film I think should be in middle and high school all over the nation to give young people a glimpse into space-time bars. Without further ado, please help me welcome the man of the hour, Mr. Kareem Mowat, to the show. Good evening, my brother. How are you today?
Hey, how are you doing, Miss Melinda? I'm doing great.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm great. I'm great as well. You know, glad to have you on the show tonight. And again, you know, I must commend you on the outstanding work that you did on this documentary. It really blew me away. So let's tell the audience a little bit about you. Are you from D.C.?
Yeah, I'm from Northwest, from uptown. But I used to live in Northeast, but I was raised uptown up on Kennedy Street.
Oh, okay. D.C., Washingtonian, native Washingtonian. I love it. So you spent a total of 20 years in prison collectively, all together. So at what age did you catch your first charge, and what was it?
My first time going to prison, I went to Lorton. I was 16 when I first caught my first case. It was a gun charge. And my first time doing time, I went to Lorton at 17. And that was for attempt murder.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So take us back to when the first time you went into Lorton at 17. Were you afraid at all? Like, what, do you remember that feeling that you felt?
Yeah, because, as you know, when you come up in D.C., you know that everybody talks about Lorton, and you usually get all these stories about riots and people getting raped and people getting murdered and stuff like that. So to a certain extent, I kind of knew I was on my way there because of the lifestyle I was living.
Uh-huh.
So when I got there, I'm not gonna say I was scared or anything, but I was just on point, and I was watching everything, and I was wild, you know. I was 17 years old, so I was kind of out of control anyway. So I was ready for drama, but at the same time, I didn't know what to expect. I was kind of like walking into a dark tunnel and not knowing what's gonna come at you, but just being prepared whatever do come at you.
Wow. So, I mean, did you know a lot of people when you got there?
I knew a few, not a lot. I knew a few people because, like I say, because I was on the street, so you always ran across guys that was coming home from Lorton or stuff like that. So I knew a few people, and then a few people sent word to the prison that I was on my way down in.
Uh-huh.
So when I got down there, a few people came to me and was like, man, your name Twin, right? Say, yeah, okay, so-and-so said, man, let you know he's down here, let you know you're good, and stuff like that. So,
okay.
You know how that go. You know, because
uh-huh.
It's like a community anyway, just like a neighborhood anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were a twin. So you are a twin. How
yeah, I got
that?
An identical twin brother.
Wow, that's amazing. So how was that? Did y'all play the little tricks on the women and all that kind of stuff? Come on, I know you, girl. I know y'all did. Y'all identical.
Oh, we definitely did that. That's mandatory.
That is funny. Oh my God, I can't imagine. So.
And not only that, we used to switch up at the jails too.
Really? Like how?
In the prison hall.
So you both were what? Okay. Oh, wait a minute. Y'all could do that? That's what's up.
Yeah.
Okay, so one go in and one go out.
Yeah. We used to do that when he was in Oak Hill. That's how we used to switch up. Or when he was in Seton Hall, we used to switch up where he'll come. I'd go in for a couple weeks and then switch back up, and he'll come home and stuff like that. That's how we should make our time go past.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Oh, my gosh. Wow. And they never knew. That's what you call identical.
They never knew.
Wow.
But what's so crazy is I used to think some of them knew, but they didn't even care because they couldn't prove it anyway, right?
Right. Identical,
yeah.
Huh? So how y'all? So
yeah,
we thought he would switch clothes in the joint, or he would wear what you had on or something, blue jeans and a white shirt.
Nah. Yeah, that's what we used to do. We used to just switch up, switch clothes in the visitor hall, or with season on. Season on didn't have a fence. So what he'll do, he'll run through the woods, and I'd be on the other side of the woods. When he'll run through the woods, I'd be in the car. He'll jump in the car, and then I'd run back through the woods and run into the prison and act like I'm him.
Man, see, now that's love right there, because I don't know too many sisters or brothers that's going to go in for their brother. Now, y'all twins share a special bond, but that's a bond that I can't even imagine. Boy, I tell you, now that's thick as thieves right there. What do you mean come back?
No question.
What do you mean come back? You know, y'all are funny. Okay, so it's funny. Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine that. Oh, my gosh. So you guys never got caught?
No, we never got caught. My brother ended up getting on the case here and now. He ended up getting arrested. And he got caught in Africa, right? He got caught in Tanzania. And when he got caught, that was one of the whole problems. That was one of the big controversies that they had during the news. And, you know, it was all over the news. That was their biggest thing. They were scared that we was going to try to switch up because they had allegations that we used to do stuff like that.
Okay. Okay. Wow. That's amazing. So the mom telling me, I'm just going to ask this last question before we get back into track here. I'm sure your mom could identify you guys. She knew you guys apart, though, right?
My mother?
Your mom.
Is that what you said? My mother?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what's crazy is, like, even right now, my mother can look at pictures of us from when we was babies, and she can't tell apart. Yeah, she can't tell us apart when we was babies, but as we got older, everybody was able to tell us apart. You know, with twins, once you get, you be around them for a while, you could tell the different characteristics and stuff like that.
So, what are your thoughts about the gun violence that we are witnessing and innocent babies being killed regularly today?
It's an unfortunate situation, but it's nothing new. You know, it's been going on forever. And I think when you got a mixture of easily available weapons, when anybody could get a gun, especially teenagers, that's a problem that's going to be unsolvable. Because if you got a 15, 16-year-old that could get a gun faster than he could get a job, and, you know, 15 and 16 and 17-year-olds don't have no right mind, they don't think. So if you got, until you could get control how many weapons are in the streets or how many weapons are in people's hands, I can't see how you're going to be able to stop that. Because I remember when I was a teenager, when I was 16, 17, and I had my pistol on me, you couldn't tell me nothing. Couldn't nobody tell me nothing. I thought I was Superman. And that's how most teenagers think.
Wow, but we're talking about 10, 11, 12-year-olds now. You know, I mean, a 12-year-old in South Carolina killed another 12-year-old in their middle school last week, 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
yeah.
In school. I mean, at 12,
right.
You know, when I was growing up, I mean, you know, boys started getting involved with stuff like that as they became 16 and 17 and stuff like that. But I never saw 10, 11, and 12-year-olds that, you know, committing the type of crimes that we are seeing today, you know?
In places like Chicago and L.A. and stuff like that, 12-year-olds, that was normal back then. Yeah, so it's the same thing. I just saw a video recently with a little 12-year-old girl killed a 13, 14-year-old boy and then killed herself by accident.
Yeah, I saw that. You know, the thing about it is that they're reckless, because I even posted today about a 2-year-old killing his 4-year-old sister today. 2 years old.
Right.
At a gas station. So, I'm missing. How in the world does a 2-year-old have access, that's a toddler, have access to a gun? Much less killing his sister with it. I mean, they don't have, don't they have safety things or something like that on these guns? I mean, make, I don't know, but it's just so hot.
Nah, the thing is, the guns they making now and the guns that people got, they got hair triggers on it. So as soon as you touch a trigger, it goes off. They don't have no safety. Like, them Glocks don't have no safeties on it. So you put a gun down. Somebody might put the gun down. They're not even paying attention. All, as soon as the baby touch it, it's going off.
Wow. So they don't even really have to pick it up.
You don't even got to pick it up. You could brush your finger against that trigger. It's going off. That's why they call it a hair trigger.
Wow. So that's what it is. So a lot of times these ghost guns just doing it.
Nah, it ain't the ghost guns. It's just the gun. It's the guns. Period. All, they got a lot of guns that's built that way, that's made with the hair triggers, and they don't have no safeties on them. And all it takes is somebody to touch it. That's why they always tell you, don't put your finger on the trigger, because as soon as you touch that trigger, it's going off, and the baby don't know that.
Wow. But I'm not understanding how reckless the owners of these guns are. You know, I'm sure young people with these guns in their possession, but around these babies, and it's just so unfortunate. So many babies. I think I read that a total of over 400 children under the age of 12 have been killed this year. This is only April. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
This is only April, so this is definitely out of the ordinary. So many young people killed by gunfire under the age of 12 nationwide. This is crazy to me. And go ahead.
All of that is relating to the type of guns that keep coming out. They keep having newer and newer guns coming out, and those guns are so easy to squeeze. That's why you see more people are getting killed now. We just see the shootout the other day in California where 6 people got killed. Them guns letting off 30 or 40 rounds in a couple of seconds. So the more high-power weapons that's on the streets, you're going to see more people getting hurt. You're going to see more people accidentally getting killed.
Uh-huh.
And it's the gun manufacturer's fault and the politician's fault, if you ask me.
How so?
Because they allow these high powered weapons to be in the hands of almost anybody, right? You got in certain states anybody can have a gun.
Uh huh.
You got 18 year old walking around with a Mac 11 on him, and it's legal, right? And they're only shooting 30 and 40. They're shooting 30, 40 rounds in a couple of seconds. He leaving in the car while he with his 2-year-old daughter. He ain't paying no attention. He leaving in the car with his 2-year-old daughter, and the daughter grab it, and she just thinking it's a toy, and she's squeezing, and she done killed somebody else. So that's why I blame the manufacturers and the politicians for that.
Mm-hmm. But I think all of that combined with the fact that you can Google how to make a gun on YouTube and it'll tell you what parts that you need to purchase and where to purchase them. I think that also has a lot to do with them. So they're so easily accessible today. So
exactly.
What, if anything, do you think we can do as a community to stop the violence? Is there anything that we can do as a community?
Yeah, see, that's a hard question, right? Because if you got, in any community, if you have one person that know how to fight real good, other people going to want to learn how to fight so they can fight this dude, right? So he can't take advantage
mm-hmm.
of him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no different with weapons. If one person has a gun, other people going to want to have guns too, because they're not going to let this one person with a gun take advantage of them. And then it just keeps escalating. So now everybody got guns, but now this one dude got a more powerful gun than these other dudes, so the other dudes want to get more powerful guns. Then this dude got 3 or 4 guns, so this dude want to get 6 guns. and it just keep going, and it just it's a nonstop thing. It's a man ego thing, right? You know, it's a man ego thing and a power thing, and it's not really a street thing for real, because it's the same thing going on with countries, with governments. Governments press each other out and try to take advantage of each other because you got bigger weapons, and everybody want to get nuclear weapons so you could be the tough guy on the block. It's a never ending cycle for real. You know what I mean?
Wow.
You understand? Yeah.
It's so unfortunate because so many innocent people are dying as a result of it. That's the thing that's so heartbreaking. I mean, just doing regular things, going out to get some waters out your car, or sitting at a red light, just regular stuff, and people are being taken away from here. It's just so, oh my gosh, it's so sad. It's so sad. I'd like to take the opportunity to to that caller, if you'd like to join this conversation, press 1 at any time during the broadcast, and you can speak directly with Kareem and join the conversation. So, Kareem, the first time you went to Lorton, how much time did you do the first time?
5.5 years.
Wow. How long did you really stay? No, I'm just kidding. You and your brother, I'm just playing. Did you stay the whole time?
So, yeah.
Come on, tell the truth.
I stayed the whole time out except for 8 weeks.
Oh, okay.
You remember when they used to have the fair days? I mean, they used to have two fairs.
Uh-huh.
And you remember they used to have two fairs, right?
Yeah, twice a year.
Okay, so one time we did that on one fair and then did it again for the next fair.
Okay. Did your mother know when you came home, huh?
Nah, my mom didn't know, right? It's one of them things where you got to keep that as secret as possible, because if one person slip up, then you know what's going to happen with that, right?
Right, so that's just between y'all little secret. Wow.
Yeah, so I did five and a half years, and then I came home. And I ended up going right back and did 6.5.
Looking back, Kareem, what do you think was the reason why you kept going in and out of jail? Were you say that you were a product of your environment, or you just didn't give a damn? What?
A mixture of both where a lot of times young men, and I think I could say that a lot of times young men get into a don't give a fuck mode, and you don't care about nothing, and you almost, to a certain extent, I think you even become suicidal mentally, where you really don't care if you live or die for whatever reason. You see so much death around you. You see so much violence around you, and you become immersed into it also, right? And it's like you don't even care about nothing no more. Because I remember one time, I didn't care about my freedom for a long time. I didn't care if I go to jail. It didn't even matter to me. And when you get caught into that mind frame, that's how you go in and out of prison. You keep going in and out. You can't get your head right. You're frustrated. And I see a lot of young dudes go through that. And I understand it because I went through that.
Right. Where did that come from? You know?
I can't pinpoint it because everybody's probably different. I can't even pinpoint it for myself. I think frustration comes in, especially for young men, when you can't find your niche, you can't figure out what you want to do in life. You're trying to get money, but you're probably not even good at that. The most frustrating thing for a young man is not figuring out what he likes to do and what he can do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
Okay. So you're trying to find yourself.
You're trying to find yourself, and you go through that frustration mode of trying to find yourself, and a lot of times you just give up. Like, man, fuck this shit, and actually, you know, the streets are always calling you. The streets is always there, and you hang out all day, and you're doing what you do with your homies, and you don't have no focus. You're just pretty much living day by day, trying to make some money, try to get fly, and you most dudes, you're not even good at that. So the frustration comes, you got your pistol on you, you catch a gun charge, you're going to jail. And in jail, a lot of times, believe it or not, a lot of dudes find more peace in jail than they find in society.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
You ever notice everything that's going on inside.
Yeah. You ever notice a lot of dudes come out of jail, they look, their skin look clear, and they look well-rested, and they look good. You notice that?
Mm-hmm. And I also notice that a lot of times they go back.
They go back because they find a lot of times there's more peace. Even in that terrible place, a lot of dudes find more peace in that place than they find in society. And I don't mean peace as far as violent peace, but mental peace.
Hmm. Like feeling a part of, maybe feeling a part of something, or, you know, I don't understand. I guess I'll never really understand.
Yeah, it's very complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I know brothers who used to actually say that they were embarrassed because they've never been to Lorton. You know, when you hear the Lorton stories and stuff like that, I know a brother, he said that he used to feel embarrassed because everybody's been to Lorton except him, right? So what do you think was the fascination with Lorton? Why have that type of fascination?
I think it's because the whole lifestyle of it, because I say Lorton was like a neighborhood, almost like say a neighborhood like Lincoln Heights or Congress Park or Potomac
mm-hmm.
Gardens or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now say that neighborhood is the spot. That's where everybody hang at. That's where all the girls be going at. They be having the parties down there, so everybody wanna go hang out in Potomac Gardens, right?
Right.
But you ain't never been down there, so it's almost like, damn, you ain't never been around Potomac Gardens? You wasn't around there when all this shit was going on? So it's like you left out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what Lorton kinda became.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Kareem, what was the turning point when you decided to turn your life around and stay out of jail?
My turning point was when I came home. Well, actually, while I was still in jail, but I came home in 2011, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was planning on leaving the streets alone because, you know, I'm not a fool, so I knew that the streets was a dead end. And I've been knew that the streets was a dead end, but it becomes addictive. It's almost like being addicted to a substance, and you're trying to fight to get off of the substance so hard that you go through these withdrawals, and the substance keeps calling you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the streets was for me. But my last time when I came home, I was in a halfway house, and I was like, man, ain't no way in the world I could keep going through this shit, because when I was in a halfway house, I came home at 39 years old, and I was in a halfway house for 18-year-olds, right? And in a halfway house, I was in Hope Village, in a halfway house, they don't allow you to have computers, right? I wanted a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, you can't have a computer in here. You can't have a computer, but you could get an Xbox. So I was like, man, I'm almost 40 years old. What I want with an Xbox? I want a computer. They said, no, you can't get a computer. You got an Xbox. So anyway, I ended up getting an Xbox, and now I'm sitting in my room playing Xbox with a bunch of 18-year-olds, and I felt embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt terrible. I was like, damn, I'm in a room with a bunch of 18-year-olds playing video games. I said, man, I'm anything. So I knew all my talents and all the stuff that I knew how to do. I said, man, I'm gonna go ahead and lock in and make sure no matter what happens, no matter how much the streets call me, I can't go back.
Mm-hmm.
And I just pretty much just locked my mind in on that and said, man, I can't do it no more because I got to leave that to the other people, man. I've been there and done that. I'd be a fool to keep going down that same path.
Mm-hmm. So that's when you decided to, that's when you bought the camera?
Yeah, so I bought a camera. While I was in prison, my mother used to send me, I wanted to write screenplays. So my mother used to send me books on how to write screenplays and stuff like that. So I'm watching, you know, you get a lot of time, so I'm watching TV a lot, I'm watching movies. And every time I watch a movie, I'll be like, man, they should have changed this. Why they do that? Why they do this? So I'm like, man, you know what? I need to make a movie. I need to stop criticizing what they do, and I'm going to make a movie myself when I go home. So when I came home, I was like, man, my mind was made up. I'm going to make a movie, but I don't know how I'm going to do it. I got the slightest idea how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to figure it out. So anyway, I kept asking people, what's the best camera to get? What's the best camera to get? I go online, and they had a nice camera I saw, so I was like, okay, bet. Somebody was actually selling one. So when I bought that joint, because I was always an artist. I was always into creating art and creating videos. So once I bought that camera, and then I ended up coming across, I was in a studio one day, dude say he had a laptop for sale. I was like, man, let me get that. Once I bought that laptop and got my software that I needed, I was like, boom, I shot a short film called A Body in the Woods, right? It's like a 5-minute film. And once I shot that and I did the editing, I was like, oh, yeah, I could do this. And I just ran with it.
What was that movie about? A Body in the Woods.
It was about a guy that his girlfriend had actually killed him. But she poisoned him, but he didn't know he was dead. So he kept coming inside the house and everything, and he still the whole time he didn't know he was dead. And then his body was actually in the woods, laying in the woods. And somebody walked through the woods and found the body, or yeah, something to that effect. I forgot exactly what it was, but it was like a quick 5-minute film. And once I was able to shoot that and edit it, I was ready to go. So right after that, I shot a full feature film called Run, about a young guy that was on the run for a murder he didn't commit. And that did pretty well. Everybody loved it. I put it on YouTube, got like 1 million views. So I was like, I'm about to do this, man.
Oh, yeah. Your mom must be really proud. Yeah.
Yeah, no question.
Right. Yeah. This amazing what you can do when you really lock into it, you know, when you make your mind up, you know what I mean?
Right. When you get, I think for every individual, they just got to get to the point where they're tired. You know, I think once you get to the point where you're actually tired, that's when you say, man, I gotta take another path.
Mm-hmm. That's when you surrender. You surrender. So you say you bought the camera off the streets, the laptop, and then you bought the editing software and taught yourself pretty much. How long did it take you to really learn, you know, to get to that point where you feel confident enough to shoot your first film? Or, you know, how long did you think it took?
It didn't take me long because I'm the type of person where I press every button. You know what I mean? I'm going to press every button 1,000 times, and I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to sit on that laptop all day pressing every button until I figure it out. And and that's what I did. So I say it probably took me about a good month of just playing with it all day, every day, and felt like I was ready to shoot my first film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. In the back of your mind, even though you were, you know, going out of prison and all that stuff, you had the desire to become a film producer. And when was that? Was it when you were when you were watching various movies and then you would critique them, or is that something that you from childhood that you wanted to eventually be?
No, from childhood, I was an artist that used to draw a lot, right? And one thing you know about anybody that's an art that likes to draw, eventually you're going to want to see those still images become moving images. So because I used to draw a lot when I was young, that's like a natural progression for most artists. Once you draw and draw and draw, eventually you like, I want to see these images move. I want to see what I drew become a film. Or just like an author. Most authors, you want to see a book become a film eventually, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was like just a natural progression for me, because me as an artist, I was a really good artist. I used to, even in prison, I used to draw on the prison walls, not with the officers allowing me, but like over DC jail. Every time I was over DC jail, I used to draw all on the walls. I used to draw cars and people fighting and all types of stuff. Everybody used to come to my cell and just be staring at the walls. One time the warden at DC jail walked into my cell. He kept hearing about the art that was doing. And he walked into my cell and was like, man, young man, you got a talent. You need to stay out of prison.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Does your twin have that same talent?
Oh, yeah, my brother a beast.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yeah, my brother beast. He got an Instagram page, Dirty Mo Art, at Dirty Mo Art. If you see his artwork on there, he's a monster.
Oh, okay, yeah, I gotta check that out at Dirty Mo Art. Yeah. Do you still write? Do you still draw?
I haven't drawn, but what I do is, outside of my film work, I do graphics. So my drawing is more digital now instead of with a pen, right?
Mhm.
Yeah, I do it digital now.
Okay. Nice. Well, hopefully we'll be seeing your work around the DMV soon. You and your brother's work.
So, yeah, we're gonna do that soon.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, that would be good. That would be good. So what would you say was the biggest mistake you made with your first film that you vowed never to make again?
The biggest mistake I made...
with your first film, or was there a mistake that you made?
I'm not gonna say I made any mistakes. One of my films, two of the people in the cast, which were leads, end up being in a real relationship, right? And that kind of messed up the whole tempo. That messed up the whole tempo of the film, because they end up saw beefing in real life.
Oh, wow. That's what you call a conflict of interest, huh?
Yeah, that was a conflict of interest. It messed up the whole tempo. That's the only thing I try to avoid with my films is when the cast members, I try to avoid cast members messing with each other. Y'all can do that after the film. I just don't want them to do it while we're filming.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you also, as I indicated, you know, when I read your bio, you did time in the feds, private prisons, Virginia State, Supermax. Why, out of all the places, I know this personally, I'm sure I do, but why Norton? Why did you choose to do a documentary about Norton?
Because it was so unique, right? And because of my experience of traveling through all these different prison systems, because the Virginia State prison system, where I went there from Lawton when they was closing Lawton. So the Virginia State prison system, the private prison system, the federal prison system, all these are different systems. And Lawton is a total different system from them.
Mm-hmm.
So by my experience of being in all these different prison system, and my experience of being in Lawton, I was like, man, I got to capture this one day when I get the experience or when I get the time. I got to capture that. And while I was doing my research, I came across a lot of stuff that I didn't know. And I was like, damn, I was like, I was going down a rabbit hole. It was so much history dealing with this prison system, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. So I chose Lawton because Lawton had 8 prisons, and I've been to 7 of them. Ain't too many people been in all the Lawton prisons. Right?
Wow.
I've been in 7 of them. The only one I haven't been in, because the 8th one is a female prison. So by my experience of traveling through all these different prisons and all that, I was like, I got to capture this, and I know it has an effect on everybody that comes out of Washington because everybody knew somebody that was in Lawton.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So Lawton, the Prison of Terror is now screening at the Apollo Theater in D.C., and it has been selling out since its release. Are you surprised how well the documentary is being received?
Yeah, tell you the truth, yeah, I am.
Really?
Because, yeah, I had a feeling that it was going to do well on the first screening, but I didn't expect that I would be on my 6th screening.
Uh-huh.
I didn't expect that at all because, I've done like 5 or 6 different films already, right? And I was doing screenings for all my films in different theaters. And usually I do 1 screening, and after that I go to streaming, right? So when I kept getting more and more people kept wanting to see the film, you know, it did kind of surprise me. I was like, damn. Threw me for a loop. I really didn't expect it. I ain't going to lie to you.
Wow. I mean, it blew me away, and I think it's also because we're going to receive it a lot different here in the DMV because, like you said, we all have experience, you know, somebody at Lawton or being at Lawton or going down there to see somebody. I experienced it myself. I was, you know, I definitely used to go down Lawton and, with a lot of other women in D.C., catching the bus down Lawton on the weekends. So I know a lot about that. Myself and my own personal experience. So I just really commend you on putting this documentary together because as we were speaking earlier about these young people, I think they really don't understand what's really going on behind those walls because as a society, we tend to celebrate and, you know, going to prison is almost like a badge of honor today. You know,
yeah,
I mean, the community, unfortunately, yes, because we would say the community will have a welcome home party coming home from jail quicker than they would have it for somebody coming home from college.
Yeah, no
it's
question.
The environment,
yep.
Huh? Yeah, so
yeah,
right. I think it's important because, you know, how detailed and how graphic the movie is, I think it is that visual will probably wake a lot of these kids up that's doing these things, not really understanding what it really is like to, you know, to be locked up. So real quick,
yeah.
I just want to ask you, go ahead.
Yeah, it's still a fine line to walk because when you're dealing with young men, I still try to be careful when dealing with young men because sometimes you could put certain violence in it and it actually excites them, right? And make them want to go even more. So
really?
It's a fine line. Yeah, we're dealing with young men. So it's a fine line on how I integrated the violence in there. Some of the violence you could see in the prison, I mean, you could see in the documentary where it was blurred out. And the only reason it was blurred out because it was too graphic, and I knew most women, especially older women, wouldn't be able to handle that type of graphic. But
uh-huh.
For young men, like if I had to screen it at a jail with a bunch of young men, I'm gonna take the blur out and just give it to them so raw that I won't hurt their stomachs, and that would more
right.
Scare them and kind of might straighten them out. But just like regular violence with two dudes stabbing each other, sometimes that might excite a young man, and he might be like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to get in there.
Wow. Now, that's sick. Now, that's sick.
I mean,
God.
Some young men are just warriors. You know, you're just built like that. That's how you are. I mean, because that's how I was. So I always try to think from my perspective.
Right, but in the documentary, when you went into that cell, you know, you said your former cell.
Yeah.
You know, that's a visual right there that I can imagine somebody saying that they want to go and. And you know how you breaking down how many hours you were there and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think. What do you suggest? What do you suggest, if anything, that we can do to change that mindset of these young people?
I don't think it's one way to do it, because every young man is a different young man from the other young man. So it's almost like you got to take it case. It's a case by case type of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So every young man is different. Some young dudes just want to find a way, and some young dudes are looking for escape for real. They can't wait for somebody to come and help them. And then you got some young dudes that's just they just far gone. You can't help them. So it's more like a case by case basis, I would say, dealing with young dudes.
So what? What do you hope to accomplish with the documentary?
I think it's educational, for one, and it also can open the eyes of young people, and it also can inspire young people to look at my story and see where I came from, see the stuff that I was involved with, and see what I'm doing now. And then also, you never know where it could go to the point of reforming this whole DC system, where everybody's getting sent all across the world. And even though I'm not an advocate of prison itself, to the point where you say, okay, we need to build a prison in DC. I'm really not into that, because I don't like prisons, period, right? But mine, I say it's more educational and could open some eyes of the whole system, not just law itself, but that's kind of the first step.
Because the film pretty much shows how a lot of the inmates, I hate to say the word inmates, but how a lot of people, because they had their family and they could see their families and how well so many did, you know, whereas now they are sending people all across the world, you know what I'm saying, Colorado, Indiana, just all these different places, so they lose touch, you know, with their families and stuff, you know, and I think the documentary showed, because of, you know, the close proximity, they were able to see their family. A lot of times it helped them in a good way. Huh?
Yeah, definitely. And it kept a lot of families intact.
Right, exactly. Because the men could still be fathers, you know, seeing their kids, even if it was just, you know, once or twice a month, you know what I'm saying? They got to have the family days down at the fair, you know. I think that the documentary is definitely one. Do you think it's too graphic for the school system?
Some of the violence could be blurred out. I would blur it out if they actually get to the point where it would want to be shown to some students. I just blur some of it out. But I guess for the young girls, you could blur it out. For the young boys, sometimes they need to see that and put them in their place.
I think they need to see
but it. Some of it, leave it just like it is?
No, I said I think they need to see it, really, because a lot of times because I just think that a lot of people talk about they don't really talk about what's really going on behind the walls. I mean, it's no guns in prison, you know, and I think a lot of these kids don't, they fear being embarrassed, and they, you know, rather than take behind whooping, they would rather shoot somebody. Then, you know,
yeah.
Back in the day, when I came up, you know, men would fight. You know, they were, a fight would break out at the crap game or something like that, and they just fought. They fought like men. One went their way. You know, they weren't trying to kill each other, and a lot of times you'll see them back together that night, that same night, drinking together. They weren't trying to kill each other.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Right, so it's just a huge, you know, different, it's a whole different mindset. But I think that the Prison of Terror documentary, I think, can really give them an eye, you know, let them see. I recommend any listeners to broadcast, if you have a child that's 10, 11, 12, 13, you know, young teen that you feel is going to the streets or just going down the wrong path, then you might want to take them to see this documentary, because it will definitely scare them straight, if nothing else. I do believe that.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Kareem, do you have any new screening dates that's coming up that you can share with the audience?
Yeah, we have one for April the 16th at 3. It's a Saturday at 3 p.m. at the Draft House Theater, which is on Rhode Island Avenue.
Okay, and that's, I want to break this down, because I had a couple of people been asking me about it. You said April 16th? Oh, that's Easter weekend.
Yeah.
Okay. Saturday.
Yeah.
What time is the show?
That is
3 p.m. Oh, 3 p.m. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, 3 o'clock. Okay. And that's on the 6th. Okay, I'll definitely let some people know that they're inquiring about it. Let's see. Do you have any other upcoming events you would like to share with the audience?
Okay, so we got that on the 16th. That's about it right now. We're also going to do a Lorton exhibit, which
okay.
We're going to have it's going to be a lot of pictures. It's going to be a lot of like artifacts, and it's going to be panels. That's what we're actually putting together now. We got a location already down on 7th Street by the basketball stadium, the Wizards stadium.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're putting that together, and what we're trying to do also with that is the artists, a lot of artists that came out of prison, we want to showcase their artwork, and authors showcase their books also.
Oh, okay. That's going to be really nice. Oh, okay. You don't have a date yet?
No, we don't have a date yet. We're still putting it together. So hopefully we have that together by June. And if I do,
okay.
You know, when I do, I just post it on my Facebook page, which is Kareem Mowat, and my Instagram page, which is Kareem Mo 100, KarimMo 100.
And what's your brother's, you know, the art link that you had shared earlier?
That's Dirty Mo.
At
Dirty Mo Art.
Okay, you're going to showcase some of your artwork at the exhibit as well?
Yeah, no question. I'm going to showcase mine and my brother.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be really nice. Okay, I'm looking forward to that. So, my brother, what's next for Kareem Mowat?
What's next is we're going to I got a bunch of screenplays that I wrote throughout the years, and I've been going back into my screenplays that I used to write. But look, I went to a go-go the other day, and I saw it as a film, right? I didn't know, I was enjoying the music and I was enjoying the crowd, but I saw a motion picture, and
okay.
it inspired me to take one of my screenplays and rewrite it, integrating some of those scenes into it. So that's what I'm working on right now.
Yeah, so that's going to be really nice, especially with the band and, you know, all the good old times, you know, cover all those spots that Chuck used to be at. You're probably too young. You might not even remember the club, the Burn. Got
club
in trouble
Burn?
A lot of days. Yeah, because the Club La Verne, man, the party didn't start. It started at midnight. And when we came out of there, the sun was up. So that goes from midnight to 6 a.m., man. I used to get punished, coming home with the sun up at 17. And then wait until I get off punishment and go right back to the go-go.
So you see how somebody from Washington, how go-go kind of it excites you, right?
I want to
capture that for people outside of D.C. to see if I could make them capture that same excitement for something that they don't really know nothing about for it.
Yes. I got you being able to do that. You made me a believer with this Lorton documentary. I tell you that. So, Kareem, that's our time. I thank you so much for being on the show tonight. I'm so excited about everything that you're doing. I'm excited about where the documentary is going to go. I think it's going to be impactful and insightful, and it's going to change some of these young people's lives. So I just thank you so much for your vision and your commitment to these young people. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Thanks a lot for having me on your show.
Absolutely. Thank you, my brother. Good luck with everything, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Our next show will be April 19th, 2022, and the featured guest will be Charnell Chaney, the founder of Bold Yoga, a nonprofit in D.C. that gives yoga sessions to children who've experienced trauma. If you have a story of injustice that you would like to share, or would like to recommend a topic for discussion on a future show, please DM author Melinda Robertson across all social media platforms. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Stay safe and be blessed. Hey, Pooh.
Okay. Goddamn.